Hi everyone, my name is Andra Stanoyo and you're listening to the Healthy Debate Show here on UK Health Radio and podcasts. According to ADHD Aware Organization, up to 15% of the population are thought to be neurodiverse. The remaining majority are neurotypical. Embracing neurodiversity is about accepting, including, celebrating and supporting neurodivergent children. And it's still, unfortunately, a challenge for our society. What about the parents? How are they managing? Can parents accept and celebrate their children? And how can this be achieved in the current society? Today, we will discuss about parenting neurodiverse children and children with mental health difficulties with Jen Stewart, a highly regarded mental health governance expert and advocate. She is the author of Hold On Tight, A Parent's Journey Raising Children with Mental Illness, where she openly discusses her parenting experiences, but also provides valuable educational and professional advice on the parental perspective of those affected by these challenges. Hi, Jen. Welcome to the Healthy Debate Show.
It's delightful to be here, Andra. Thank you for having me.
I'm very pleased that we managed to get together and discuss about this topic. I've been wanting to have an expert on board that is able to give us a full perspective on this matter. So I'm very pleased you accepted my invitation. Please tell us a few things about your job and your experience in this field.
Absolutely, be delighted to. And let me start off by saying that I'm not a professional expert in mental health and neurodiversity. I'm a parental expert. I also have extensive governance and advocacy experience that we'll talk about. But if I back up, I was born and raised in New York City. I'm in Toronto now because I married a wonderful Canadian and we've been for many, many years. And it's been quite a both a professional and a personal journey. I grew up like so many of us in warm, loving families, really never knew any true adversity in my life, got my MBA and started work on Wall Street. And once I got married, moved up to Bay Street, which is Canada's equivalent of Wall Street, and spent the bulk of my career, 25 years, with the global executive search firm Aegon Zehnder, that a number of you may know. And I had a fantastic career there. I rose to become the managing partner of the Toronto office and sat on the global executive committee for a number of years. I would say, never had any adversity in my life. Neither did my husband, David, who was born and raised in Canada. But then we had kids, Andrew and Ainsley, and they're heroic and amazing children. But life has really been a nonstop emotional roller coaster journey since then. And it's their stories that propelled me into governance and advocacy years and years ago. Because of my work at Aegon Zehnder, I understood the role of boards and governance because I had advised so many boards and senior executives through the years. And once the children's medications and therapy started working, we'll talk about that, I know, as we go, I finally had the emotional reserves and the energy to pay it forward and look outside. So since that time, I've sat on about seven different boards and advisory councils in both Canada and the United States. I currently chair the largest autism services provider in Canada called Carey's Place Autism Services, and I serve as a consultant to the Tourette Association of America's Education Advisory Board. I was previously vice chair of Canada's leading psychiatric hospital and also worked in an advisory capacity volunteering at Mass General Hospital in Boston with their Department of Neuropsychopharmacology. So from that work, that's really formed my background.
Well, thank you very much for taking us very briefly through your life journey, isn't it? It's great to hear that you made the best out of this experience and you transformed it into a real career for advocacy, which I think is very empowering for anyone that's listening, regardless if they have children with special needs or mental health problems. I believe, making the best out of the situations that are put forward to us is the way forward. So thank you very much for sharing this personal details with us. What would you say was the most challenging stage in your journey of raising two children with mental health disorders?
Yeah. It's a great question. And there have been so many. So let me back up if I might.
Sure.
Once the kids were born, and I describe this in my book, Hold On Tight, we, both David and I, felt that something wasn't right from almost the very beginning. For example, our son, Andrew, his hands and feet move constantly in circular motion. Unlike other babies, he didn't talk to himself, gurgle, or play in his crib. And he had no self-control when it came to feeding. We actually did an experiment on him when he was 6 months old about, and we gave him as many bottles of milk as he wanted. And after he downed 5 straight bottles, I kid you not, and didn't get sick and would have kept going, we were scared and stopped him. And the next day, we gave him just 1 bottle. We decided to control his intake. And to my surprise, he was just as happy. So I saw that even at 6 months old, he had difficulties with self-regulation. But every time I brought up a concern with the pediatrician, he turned to me and said, "Jan, calm down. Your children are just fine. It's you. You need to be a less vigilant, triple type A parent." This is so common. I hear it all the time. And, you know, I should have trusted my gut. These are many neurodevelopmental markers that the children exhibited. And as they grew, we had increasing concerns. There was impulsivity, distractibility, there was anxiety, tics, learning disabilities. Andrew couldn't maintain eye contact, had real trouble with change and transitions between activities, and had no abstract thinking capabilities. But suddenly, shortly after he turned 9, out of nowhere, he burst forward one morning in a 2-hour frightening screaming rage, punching holes in walls, kicking, lashing out at everything and anything. We later found out that this is common associated with emotional overload, but of course we didn't know at the time. And he couldn't identify any reason. And he broke my heart when he told me he felt he was going crazy and wanted to die. This was followed within a month by nonstop compulsive rituals. This was his OCD talking, but again, we didn't know it. He touched walls repeatedly, took 20, 30 minutes to put on his socks, and they escalated. He even put knives in his mouth and got down on the filthy floor and licked it repeatedly. I felt like I was in the Twilight Zone. And it was then and only then that he was fully diagnosed. And that's because his behavior was so severe, his symptomology. I know many families who wait longer, and it's terrible. So he's been diagnosed with autism, Tourette syndrome, obsessive compulsive disorder, ADHD, and learning disabilities. And in Ainsley's case, she was much easier as a baby and toddler. And David and I thought we could relax, but then she started school and her behavior was out of control, sent to the principal's office every day. And then came a lot of fragility, paralyzing anxiety, and real difficulty understanding her friend's social cues, so that she unfortunately lost every friend she had in the neighborhood. You can imagine how that affected her self-esteem. But what upset me so much there, when you talk about the most challenging stage, is that after being sent to the principal's office for the umpteenth time, she left me a note on my bed that said, "Mom, I know I'm a bad child, but I can't help my out of control behavior." It was so upsetting to hear that as a parent. And if I may, Andra, I have a little excerpt from Hold On Tight I'd just like to read about a later stage with Ainsley. So after Ainsley graduated from high school, she attended a small liberal arts university, not in Toronto. And she did okay her first year. They had wonderful, strong student support program, and she has extensive learning disabilities. But in the second year, she was not successful. So here's the excerpt. Ainsley unraveled at Curry after her last breakup with her boyfriend. Her friend Amy was planning to get married and move to Virginia the following year, leaving Ainsley with no friends. She craved acceptance and connections with others and started to confuse sex with affection. Her grades dropped as she found her psychology courses increasingly difficult. She feared that she would not be capable of pursuing a career in the field, and the thought of having to get a PhD overwhelmed her. She still had significant difficulty with math and could not tell time. She started cutting her wrists and arms with a knife as a cry for help. She needed to let us know that she was not okay. We were so thankful when she finally agreed to leave and move back home for good at the end of her second year. But Ainsley's first year back in Toronto was a nightmare for all of us. Although she was relieved to be home, she was scared of her fragile mental health and knew that she needed intensive therapy. She continued to cut her arms and wrists. And even though she was very worried about what was going on, the frequency and intensity of her outbursts increased, and her distress became even more palpable. She couldn't control herself. She was miserable and repeatedly told me that she hated herself. I was frantic with worry.
Jen, thank you so much for sharing this paragraph from your book. It's very painful to hear the amount of emotional charge of these messages, thinking that you've actually gone through this.
We have different challenges, don't we?
It's a totally different story, isn't it? I think at the end of the day, you know, the courage that you have demonstrated as a parent to support your children is absolutely amazing, especially because, you know, there is a tendency to focus a lot on the child, you know, the child progression, the child support. And I'm saying this because I've worked early in my career as a special needs teacher, and the care I've seen around children was amazing, was great. However, what was missing was the support that parents received during those periods. There was very little support that they actually received, or very little consideration, or very little, you know, practical solutions to their problems.
Yeah, the good news is that's changing rapidly.
Yeah. And this is where my curiosity lies, absolutely. And I would like to hear more about that. In terms of what you've discovered in your advocacy work, was there anything that, I'm sure there was, so it's a bit of a redundant question, but what exactly did you discover as a parent put in that position to, you know, take the mental health issues, you know, very seriously and address them? Because you just mentioned to us that Andrew was diagnosed when he was 9. I find that astonishing.
Oh, they're children. And we were fortunate in a strange way. There are children that wait far longer because many of these disorders cross over and look like one another and can act alike. And what happens is, you know, Andrew, I would say when he was 7, was partially diagnosed just with OCD and ADHD, but not with everything. And what happens when a child is not diagnosed correctly or even partially diagnosed is they get set on the wrong path, or wrong medications potentially, wrong therapeutic approaches potentially, and it can really cause problems.
Yeah. So going back to your health governance and advocacy, what exactly did you discover as a parent about mental health that raised your interest towards, you know what, I can do more than just being, you know, a parent who has challenges. I can change things. I can be in this in this circle of change, and I can influence the public into, you know, probably reconsidering mental health problems in children. So what was exactly behind your interest in advocacy?
Yeah, a great question again. And my children have always been behind it. You know, I have a strange fatalistic view that you're given what you can handle, and there's a reason for it. And I was gifted these two amazing children with heartbreaking adversity at times. And so you can embrace life or be defeated by it, and I have chosen to embrace it and move it forward. I just cannot think of a more worthwhile activity than to give back. And we parents of neurodiverse children can play such a critical role, not only in influencing policy directions of mental health and neurodiversity, but to help ensure that our children's rights receive the needed attention, that our voices are heard. Now, as I said a few minutes ago, not every parent can find the strength nor the time, especially when they're in crisis, to become involved. But when the darkness lifts a little bit, it's so beneficial to do so. And I find it personally uplifting to really see the differences we can make. Our whole family, Andra, advocates, not just me. My husband co-leads the Tourette Canada support group in Toronto, and he's on the board of a supportive housing organization. Both Andrew and Ainsley are very involved in inclusion and diversity initiatives, both in autism, Tourette syndrome, other areas. It's great. We really believe in repaying what I call the angels in our lives and getting out there. We've just got to shout out about these issues to get rid of the fear, misunderstandings, and stigma. You know, it drives me crazy when I hear certain celebrities, I'm sure you've all heard this, say that autism is caused by vaccines. Or, you know, there's just no evidence of that. Or that ADHD is, you'll see on the net, oh, it's bad parenting or laziness. Do all autistic kids bang their heads? Does every child with Tourette swear nonstop? You know, it just doesn't happen. So we've got to educate the public with facts rather than myths. And we've also got to educate the media. You know, I think it's gotten a lot better as more awareness of these issues has come to the fore. But there's still way too much sensationalizing. My favorite show on TV is Law and Order, and has been for years. But even they still often pair mental illness with criminal activity. But at the heart of it, when we talk about these issues, we demystify them and they become less frightening for people, and you can build support and awareness. And that's exactly why I wrote Hold On Tight. All this advocacy work has led so many struggling parents to reach out for help. And I so remember being in their position, frightened, frozen, not knowing where to turn or how, feeling isolated. And I want to pay it forward and help those parents, as well as better educate healthcare providers, families, friends, educators, and employers.
What would you say were the biggest challenges of your children in the society? You've briefly described some of them, but what was the point where you kind of felt like, I need to do something because it feels quite a lonely position where I'm currently sitting with my husband?
I don't think that I ever thought of it that way, to be frank, Andrew. I'm just thinking through your question.
Yeah.
I just knew from the beginning, you know, when the kids were in such agony and distress, both David and I promised them that we wouldn't stop until we got them the right help. And finding the right help was quite a challenge to navigate our complex healthcare system that I think is not just true in Canada, but all over the world.
Yeah.
To find schools who would truly partner with us. And then as the kids have become adults, to find really inclusive employers. Really finding those challenges and identifying the fact that others hadn't really done it in front of me. Of course it had been done, but it was hard to access. I said, I've got to get the word out. And that's what propelled me forward. Now, on top of that, it can be, as I said, very isolating and lonely because certain family members and friends will distance themselves from you. And this, again, is out of that lack of education and fear, stigma, misunderstandings that I mentioned. And so you have to learn to recalibrate those relationships. And I can give you lots of examples, but at the core, the good news, and I am a hope ambassador, that's what I call myself, is that other parents of neurodivergent children form such a wonderful community of care and love and understanding, and we help each other. And that also bolsters each other.
How are your children doing now, Jen?
Oh, my children are amazing. So they know that their endless roller coasters are going to continue through the rest of their lives. It's going to be bumpy, and there are better times and worse times, but I'm so proud of each of them. Andrew has a wonderful job at one of Canada's leading telecommunications companies. He gets himself to and from work every day on the subway, and he has an infectious charm. I'll give you a quick story just that happened last week. We were on the subway going downtown, and Andrew loves baseball. And sitting across from us on the subway, which was fairly crowded at the time, was a young man wearing a Toronto Blue Jays baseball cap. And Andrew loves the Jays. It's his team. So Andrew, who has no filter, simply reached out to him and started chatting with him. And the next thing I knew, within 5 minutes, half the car had joined in the conversation. And Andrew just has that effect on people. It's fantastic. With Ainsley, she really grapples today with severe anxiety, especially social anxiety, but not only, as well as executive function deficits with her ADHD. I don't know if everyone knows what executive function is, but in case you don't, think of it as the orchestra in your brain, the conductor of the orchestra in your brain that helps you plan, organize, time management, get things done. Also helps you avoid saying and doing the wrong thing. And she really struggles with that. That pairs with ADHD. But she is the most gifted child and youth counselor working with young autistic children today. And I'm convinced that it's her deep intrinsic knowledge of her brother, as well as her own lived experiences, that have made her such a valued resource. What I see in both of them, Andrea, is breathtaking grit, determination, will to succeed, and that key word again, perseverance.
Well, absolutely amazing to hear that. It's not just hope out there. There are really great results that these children can have with the right support, with the right educational support, and I'm glad that you and your community managed to offer this to your children, and I'm sure that hundreds of other children are benefiting from a similar support. So I'm very pleased to hear that they're doing very well, and they are connected with the society, and they're giving back to the society. It's really great news, and I think this is probably one of your biggest achievements, isn't it?
Oh, without a doubt. I'm so proud of them. They really are heroic.
And I'm sure they're very proud of you and the support that you and your husband David have, consistently given them throughout the time. So, Jen, I would like us to take a short break now. But once we're back, I really want us to focus on some solutions for parents, on supporting parents from burnout. You've mentioned quite a few times that, being in those situations can be quite paralyzing and can make you feel like you're in a frozen moment, and you do need support and in order to overcome the challenges. So let's take a few minutes break, and then we'll come back with Jen Stewart to discuss neurodiversity and how to parent children with mental health problems.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
If optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list, then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one supplement brand, help you put back what life takes out. All-in-one comprehensive formulas created to offer you maximum benefit, whatever stage of life you're at, and with a range that supports everything from immunity, energy, cardiovascular health, joints, cognitive function, menopause, and even beauty. We've got you and your family covered. Premium ingredients packed into a powerful daily sachet. Simply mix with water to activate for a flavorful health drink. Perfect at home or on the go. Revive Active. Available at selected Holland & Barrett stores, Well Pharmacies, and online at Amazon and reviveactive.com. Super supplements for a super you.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, Every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And we're here with Jen Stewart. We are discussing neurodiversity. And before the break, Jen was giving us a very brief introduction into her wonderful life, into the progress that her children made and the efforts that they made to become better and better each day and to adapt. So thank you very much, Jen, for doing that. Let's go back to people's perceptions. And this is because I've struggled a lot in trying to understand the stigma around mental health, children's mental health. And as a special needs teacher, I found myself in many contexts where people were, you know, we were with the children on the streets, just going to theater or doing all sorts of activities, and people were moving away from us. Yeah. And that was the day-to-day reality. They didn't like us to be around. They didn't like us in children's parks. I remember many situations when I actually had to go to other parents and explain that, you know, what's happening and educate them. And that was very challenging for me as an educator. Probably not so much comparing to what the parents had to deal with every single day. Every time they were out in public with their children. So let's talk about how can we change people's perception about stigma.
Yes, yes. And it's very, very important. So I think it's very clear we have to shout out about these issues to get rid of the stigma. And as I said, it's educating with facts, not myths. Once you can talk openly about these issues, you demystify them and they become less frightening for people and they build support and awareness. To me, that's the key. Now, not everyone is going to listen, and I've never cared, frankly, what anyone outside thought of my children or me. If they're scared, if they don't like it, if they think, I even had at one point someone tell me, well, is he contagious? Really? I mean, yeah. That to me is just ignorance, and I move on. I see that my role is at that wider macro level of governance and advocacy. Unless someone individually wants to become educated, you know, it's very hard to do that. And I don't want to become embroiled in that. It's a no-win. But we look for win-wins. And the more we talk about this, the more we can volunteer, the more we can advocate, that's how we can really fight the misunderstandings.
What would you advise a parent that is facing this type of situations? Let's say they're out in a park or in a supermarket, the child is not faring very well, people are gathering around or giving the looks. What would you advise them in the moment? What would be the one thing that will help them stay grounded and supportive towards their children rather than getting too confused with what's around them?
Yeah. So what I would say is persevere and keep, just propel yourself forward. Ignore them. It's their problem, not your problem. It only becomes your problem when someone interacts with your children in a negative way. And then you have to step in just like any other parent. It's no different that way. It's parenting 101, but magnified, in other words. But you just keep your looking forward with optimism and hope, and you can do it. It's that determination and grit that you need. And that's what I write about in Hold On Tight.
Let's talk about burnout, because having these events, for example, happening quite often, I imagine that the emotional distress is as high as it can possibly get. Have you, in your work, experienced any situations where parents came forward and they looked burned out, they looked exhausted, they looked for some answers and for some hope from you? Did you have any experiences that will made you think about, you know, how do we manage emotions, our emotions as parents, in order to avoid burnout?
Well, this happens every day, and I'm not immune from it, Andra. You know, I have to watch myself and not get burned out. So, yes. So a couple of things. Let me back up again. Mental health and neurodevelopmental disorders throw every family member's life into disarray. There's going to be fear. There's going to be anger and resentment. I can't tell you how many times I've wanted to crawl into a hole and disappear. Or how even to this day, I'll look at myself at times and say, why me? Why us? But the key to being able to move forward is to not only accept, but embrace the fact that your life is not going to be as planned for or hoped for in many ways. Not in all ways, but in many ways. You know, David and I started our journey the same as every other parent, wanting happy, successful children, right? That's what we all want. But we were so frightened and drained. You know, we had to stop having a social life for a number of years because we never knew what the behavior would be like at home. And as I said, we had to recalibrate certain relationships with friends who distanced themselves. And I had to shed them. It was very upsetting, but I just didn't have those emotional reserves to devote to them. Again, it's those other parents of neurodivergent children who helped, but also with certain family members, particularly those who are critical, judgmental, or in my case, worse, who think they have all the answers. You know, even my mother, who was my closest friend in the world, and I thought understood everything, turned to me one day and said, Jen, if you were just a stricter parent, Ainsley's unruly behavior would disappear. And another time, Andrew was on a very powerful antipsychotic medication. This was a life-saving medication that stopped his rages in their tracks after 9 months of daily two-hour rages. So you can imagine. Yeah. But he started gaining 3 pounds a week on this medication, very common with it. Fortunately, in his case, it stopped after 6 weeks. I know a number of other children who have gained 60, 70 pounds and more on it. But again, it's a lifesaver for Andrew. And my mother again said to me, well, you don't want a fat child. And I was horrified. You know, what do you do? So you have to learn to navigate and limit engagement as needed. You also have to learn to be kind to your partner. This is true for all of us in marriages and partnerships, you know, but these disorders magnify stresses and strains that can be debilitating. So what that means is you must try to give each other the benefit of the doubt. I've heard parents blame one another, undermine, accuse, lots of differences about everything from diagnoses and medications and therapy. Particularly, I think medications cause a lot of disagreements. And we have to remember that our children know when we're disagreeing. They know we're not on the same page. And again, David and I have had many instances of this, but we've really leaned on one another, trusted one another. I do believe in my heart that almost everyone tries their best. It may not be what you want and what you need, but they're trying their best given their own situations and stress. You know, we even joke. I tell a story. I tell it in the book and I tell it in many of my speeches that David has a restless leg. So I'll point at him and go, aha, ADHD comes from you. And he'll right back at me because I'm a perfectionist. And I'll say, aha, back, OCD to you. So it doesn't really matter from our perspective where these disorders come from. It's interesting and important from a clinical, from a research perspective. But what's important that we act as a unit harmoniously in the children's best interests. Now, this leads into the importance of self-care. It is absolutely critical. It's obvious to say that if you can't take care of yourself, you can't take care of your kids if you're not healthy. But for parents of neurodivergent children, This goes far beyond the typical exercise, sleep, eating healthfully. Obviously, you want to try to do all those, and they can be difficult when you're in crisis. Reach out for the support you need. As I've said, to me, those other parents of similar children, support groups, they've been so reaffirming. They've strengthened my emotional fortitude and really helped me with issues. Humor, really important as part of your coping toolkit. Andrew and I, years ago, were taking our dog for a walk in some nearby trails. And Andrew was vocally ticking from his Tourette syndrome. He was hooting. And it sounded like, woo, woo. A passerby came running up and said, "Are you okay?" And Andrew, I remember thinking to myself, uh-oh, I'm from New York, so I'm used to that. But Andrew may not know how to deal with it. Without batting an eye, he looked at her and he said, "Oh, I'm fine. I'm just bird calling." So I don't know how he found that answer, but it was absolutely brilliant. You must carve out part of your life as your own. This is deals with the burnout, away from your partner, away from your children. You can so easily get lost in the morass of your children's struggles. So whether it's your career, and I had an extremely high-pressure career, but I thrive there. And I think part of it is that it separated me from the challenges and issues at home, and I focused on my work, and it was a respite, believe it or not.
Yeah.
Also, hobbies. I competed at a very high level in duplicate bridge, and with bridge, you have no choice but to focus only on bridge. I love the treadmill at the gym. It really gives me perspective and lets me think through things. You must take breaks. So sometimes, particularly when you're in crisis, you don't think you can, run a warm bubble bath. I find them very soothing. Go for a 15-minute walk by yourself. All these little activities build on one another and help you refuel, rebuild your own identity, and get some breathing room that you must have. There's absolutely no choice. I think finally, be kind to yourself. This is not an easy one for me. I try hard to forgive myself for my mistakes. Years ago, when Andrew was going through those horrific rages, I found Ainsley shaking in fear, hiding in her closet when I came home from work. And it took me a long time to forgive myself for not having protected her better. And with Andrew, David and I were great textbook parents. We told both kids, "You're not going to be limited by your issues." And I truly believe that in many ways, most ways, and they do too, which is wonderful. But when it came time for Andrew to graduate from high school, he decided he wanted to attend MIT. Now, Andrew was not a candidate for any college or university, and he was rightfully resentful of me for a number of months. And it took me a long time to get over the fact that I had given him such unrealistic dreams. But I know how important it is to also compliment myself. And all parents must do that. I pat myself quietly on the back and remind myself of my strength and fortitude. And I want all parents of neurodivergent children to do that.
I think what's great about your suggestions, Jan, is the fact that they are realistic things that anyone can do, to be fair, regardless if they're parenting a child with mental health problems or, you know, they're just parenting. I think most of the times in most of the situations, and even with my friends, I don't have children, but I do have friends with children. And I do notice that there is a tendency to almost put everything on the time spent with the child, forgetting about, you know, what's important also, you know, it's your emotional health, it's your relationship you have with your partner. And that also feeds into your child's support. So it's great to hear that you're going to gym, you have your hobbies, you're very aware around, you know, the areas that you know you need to improve, and you put kindness there. That's always an exercise, isn't it? And I think that's what makes your book amazing, because it talks from a perspective that's reasonable, that's reachable. It's an honest experience. It doesn't have you know, a tough language that makes things difficult to understand. On the contrary, it's I would say it's a letter of love towards your children and anyone who's struggling. So thank you very much for sharing this recommendations with the parents on the line. Let's take a short break, and then when we're back, we'll just have a couple of more minutes, Jan, because I don't even know where the time flew. Now I'm looking at the time. I would like us to discuss about the community contribution and how can the community support you know, parents around the world. So we'll be back with Jan Stewart discussing the community support for parents and children.
The station that makes you feel good.
Hey, are you tired of the irritation you get down there from pads and other bladder weakness products? Tena Sensitive Care Pads are the first ever bladder weakness pads enriched with a skin comfort formula. The skin-friendly layer in combination with the soft, 100% breathable materials helps protect intimate skin from irritation. And as always, you have triple protection from leaks, odor, and moisture. Gynecologist tested and dermatologically approved by the Skin Health Alliance. Look for Tena Sensitive Care Pads with the Skin Comfort Formula online and in stores now.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck. Fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries
and cream. A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And we're back. We're discussing neurodiversity. We're discussing the support that parents can receive. So let's talk about the community contribution, because we talked about self-care, we talked about self-love, self-fulfillment. You talked about your experience, you know, being a big player in the company you worked for. How does the community help us? Can the community help us?
Well, the answer is absolutely, and we must do more and more. So the definition, of course, the word community can be both micro and macro. Now, on a societal level, on a larger level, societal connectivity is so important for neurodivergent individuals. You know, when I talk about inclusive employers, once they're grown, it's giving these individuals dignity and respect, treating them as Andrew's employer does and Ainsley's employer does, as a full member of the team. It doesn't mean treating them the same. They need accommodations, customized, but it means giving them all the opportunities and resources that we can. And as I said earlier, it's getting a lot better, but we have a far way to go, not only in policies and government decisions, but just as a kind and caring society. On a more micro level, the best advice I can give to family members and friends and those neighbors and those who live by is to simply ask the parents how best you can support them. People are always amazed when I say this, Andrew, but it's true. You don't want to be overly intrusive. You don't want to, as I said earlier, offer unasked for advice, but don't be afraid to ask. Sometimes it's just a sympathetic ear listening. and letting, I've had it happen. I had a friend who just sat there and let me cry. It was wonderful. Sometimes it's a long, loving, warm embrace. And other times it's finding laughter together, you know, and just in everyday situations. I remember a neighbor coming down and we laughed terribly about Ainsley, who with her severe ADHD and impulsivity and everything else, if she didn't feel a teacher supported her, she would just rudely swear at them. And so again, finding humor in that, and really, it just gives you perspective and makes you feel better. The key is to let these parents know you're there for them. They're not alone. Propel them forward to live their lives with hope and optimism. And for the kids, just talk openly with them. They know what's going on if they've been educated. If they don't, they're scared. And so the more we talk honestly and transparently with them, the better.
Jen, thank you so much for today. It's been really an inspiring conversation. I'm really pleased we managed to capture quite a few of the questions that I had. I know that we didn't finish. I know that the list was much longer, especially in my mind. However, I'm very pleased that we managed to speak about the success of your children and the success of your advocacy. And I really want our listeners to reach out to you and to purchase your book and to receive this firsthand support that you are offering them there. So please share with us your social media links or your website, anything that can help us reach out to you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. So first, the book, Hold On Tight, A Parent's Journey Raising Children with Mental Illness, is widely available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, in Canada, Indigo, and Caversham, which are great shops. It's doing phenomenally well. It just came out last month, and it's won the Mom's Choice Award, which I'm thrilled about.
Congratulations. That's a huge achievement.
Thank you. I have a website at janstewartauthor.com, and anyone can reach out to me. You can see a box on that. I also have a quarterly newsletter with lots of information about tips and insights. So feel free through the website to sign up for that. And on social media, I post every day about neurodiversity at Jan Stewart Author. Finally, I write a monthly column for Today's Parent, a wonderful publication. It's an online publication, and it's on autism currently. So I really thank you, Andra, and I hope I have given everyone some inspiration and empowerment to persevere, have hope, and hold on tight.
I'm sure you did, Jen, and thank you very much for your wisdom and for being very open about your experiences, because I'm sure that not everything is very easy to share. And thank you very much for taking the time to speak with us. I wish you all the best with your projects. We hope to see more books coming out and more advocacy work, because you're doing fantastic. And say hello to your children from us.
Oh, thank you. I'm delighted to have been on. Thanks.
Until next time, may we hear only good things.